touched on Kohanim most kiddushim and touched on Ayin Gimel. There was once a man who came to a town that he had never been to before. He'd never been there. He didn't really know much, and he's looking for a certain address to be able to stay there. Maybe one of his relatives, whatever it was. So he's looking around for a certain address. He soon got lost. He had absolutely no idea where he was. So he sees a guy in the street. He goes over to the guy and he's like, "Listen, I have no idea where I am. I'm new to this town. Can you help me out a little bit?" Now the guy, you know, was dressed nicely, looked like a good guy. He turned to the guy and he said, "Listen, oh, you're a new guy here. Okay, listen, I've lived here for a long, long time. What are you looking for?" He goes and sees the address and he says, "Oh, perfect. I know that address. It's right by where I'm going right now. So come with me. I'll take you there. We'll both go together and we'll go to the same place." Start walking, and the man who lives in the town, you know, the townsman, we'll call him, he turns to the guest and he says to him, "Listen, you know, you're new in town. Are you hungry? Have you had anything to eat yet?" He says to him, "You know, I really haven't had anything to eat, but I don't have any money on me. I was planning on just going to this person's house and I was planning on getting a meal there. So it's okay. Don't worry about it. I don't need anything right now." So the guy said, "Listen, buddy, you're new to town, right? How can I store him? I'll take you out to eat. I'll bring you someplace, you know, to a nice little place. We'll have a good meal. And then afterward, I'll take you back there." The guy said, "Please, it's not necessary." He said, no, I want to do it. Don't worry about it. Come with me." So both go to the restaurant. They sit down at the restaurant. The guy says to him, "Listen, order anything you want. Anything you want, it's all on me. Don't worry about it. Well, I'll take care of it." Okay, so the guy goes, and he's like, he orders this and that and the other. He like has the best meal he's ever had. And the other guy also is eating really, really well. They both have a really, really good meal. And as they're about to finish, they're about to have desserts. So the guy, the townsman, gets up and he's like, "Just give me like 5 minutes. I was supposed to check on something. I'll be back in a couple minutes, okay?" He gets up and he's gone. Absolutely gone. So the guest is sitting there waiting at the table and waiting and waiting and waiting. And meanwhile, the waiter comes to the table and says, "Sir, your check. You know, I have the check for you." So the guy says, "Listen, I'm not supposed to pay. It was the person that I was with that was supposed to pay. I'm just waiting for him to come back. I'm sure he'll come back in a few minutes, right? I'm sure he'll take care of it." So the waiter waits a little bit longer and then comes back to him and says, "Listen, buddy, I don't know who the other guy was that you were with, but you're the only one sitting at this table. You're the one responsible to pay the bill. So if you don't have any money for the bill, then we're going to have to, I don't know what they do at that point. Kill you? Let's just say kill you." And that's that. And that, there's no choice. There's absolutely nothing else we can do. The guy obviously felt absolutely horrible, but what's he supposed to do? I mean, the guy cheated him out of everything. Says the Chafetz Chaim, that charlatan, good word, isn't it? I like that word, charlatan. It's up there in my top seven. The charlatan is the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara convinces you to sin and that he'll take all responsibility for it. "It's my fault," says the Yetzer Hara. But at the end of the day, you look around for him to blame and he's nowhere to be found. When you're up in the Beis Din Shomaila after 120 and Beis Din says, "Why do you do this? Why do you do that?" There's no one to blame but yourself. You're the only person there. All of Parshas Arayos is like this. You think that you can get out of something, you can get off, you can blame your Yetzer Hara, nothing will happen to you, but it's not so. The bill is in your name, not his. And if the bill is in your name and he's not going to be around at the time to be able to help you, then you're gone at the end of the day and there's nothing you can do. Obviously, there's got to be a little bit to that. I think the Chafetz Chaim was an extreme in some way. And again, I think the Chafetz Chaim was saying it in a more extreme way to make a point rather than say it around there. I like the little mushel. I thought the mushel was really, really good because I can imagine somebody doing that to another person. I can imagine how the person felt. That's the only reason why. But I definitely hear you that there would be circumstances and other things that might go into it that would allow for something a little bit better. Let's go into this Parshas Arayos. Parshas Arayos, now we all know you're not allowed to sleep with your mother, not allowed to sleep with your sister, the wife of your father, and not allowed to sleep with your granddaughter, not allowed to sleep with your daughter either, right? The sister of your father, that's your aunt, you can't sleep with the sister of your mother, another aunt, you can't sleep with your uncle's wife, that's another issue, daughter-in-law, obviously, a wife of your brother, right? Obviously, your brother's wife is impossible, a woman and her daughter, a woman and her sister, and then Anita, you're not allowed to marry as well as an Ashes Ish. Pretty good list. I mean, that really does get everyone down pretty well. A couple missing, but they add them on.
Is that
and I'm sorry?
A woman and her sister.
Woman and her sister. Two sisters, 100%. Yaakov Avinu.
So how is that? I mean, I know we think after the time of Yaakov, but how is it possible?
I have 12 answers, but the easiest answer is that Gershon is Geyer Kikatan Shino Ladami, that a Ger that when there's Megayer by the times of Yaakov is considered like a Katan, and therefore they were not related to one another. That's one of the easiest ones that's given by the Panach Raz of the Das Kanim and most of the Balei Tosfos. That's the usual answer. There are other answers. They didn't keep the Mitzvos in Eretz Yisrael, or the Chiyuvim wasn't then, or there was already a Neder given to Ruffel. There's other answers.
But files with them.
Okay, we're stopping right there. So now, let's go on. After all these arayas that it goes through, it then says a very, very strange line. Umizarachon, from your children, lo sitein lahavir lamolech. You cannot give over to the avodah zarah that's known as molech. Velo sechal Hashem al shem alokecha, ani Hashem. You can't be machal shem shemayim, you can't make a chal Hashem, I am HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then afterward, that's zachar lo sishka, you can't be together with another male. And then, uvokol behema lo sitein shechatecha, can't be together with an animal. Strange. We go through all the arayas, one after the other. Then afterward, we go to this avodah zarah, this crazy avodah zarah known as molech. And then we go into other arayas. So why did we differentiate? Now, I get that there's a difference between being together with all the women that we had up above, and then a man and an animal, right? And putting molech, I get that. I understand that there might be a difference between them, but it's still strange that molech would be in between those. Why is molech put inside here? It should be after everything, or something like that. So let's go into the entire idea. Molech, says the Ibn Ezra, is named, but it refers to any service where they rule over you and they tell you what to do. Where they are your melech, so to speak. That's what molech stands for. There's a machlokes about exactly what happens when you go to molech. Rashi says the priests throw him through the fire. You give your son over to the priests. The priests of molech take the son and throw him through a fire. Basically, the process was, although Yalkut Shimoni brings down a different girsa, but basically the process was that there were two rows of a fire with a little road in between. The little road was where the child stood right in front of, and then the priest, according to Rashi, would take the child and throw him through. The child was very, very young, 1 or 2 years old at the time. Of course, he could be older, but usually is a very, very young child. And they threw the child in, and the child would either get through the fires without getting singed, without burning to death, and he would be fine, or he would die in the fire, and the molech priest would promise him that all of his other children were going to be successful. That was the basic promise. There was another Yalkut Shimoni that brings down that it was a crazy statue. This statue with 7 sets of arms. And if you wanted to bring a bird, you brought on the bottom set. Right? If you wanted to bring like a little lamb, then the second set. If you wanted to bring like a goat, then the third step. And then a calf is the fourth step. And then it was a large sheep is the fifth step. A large cow, the sixth step. And the seventh step was for a human being, a human child. You put the child inside there. You fill the stomach of the idol filled with fire. Fill it up with fire all the way through so that the arms, which were made of metal, would be burning hot. And as the baby or the animal would be screaming until it was burned to death, they would bang on these drums so that nobody could hear the screams and the yells that was happening from Molech. That's the idea of what Molech was all about. So Rashi says the priest stormed through the fire. Ramban argues that they wave him a bit. They take the child, pick him up, and give him over to Molech, so to speak, then give him back to the father, and the father sends him through. The father is the one who sends him through the fire. There's another argument whether it was imminent death. Was the child definitely going to die or not? The Ramban brings down both shittas. One shita that it's possible that he wasn't going to die, that he was able to make it through, and the other shita there's no way he could live. And there was one miraculous child who was able to live. Does anybody know who it was? One child. Chizkiah was the only child. Achaz, his father, sent him through the fire. He was the only child to have been able to live through Molech. There's nobody else who was able to do most of the times, if not all the times, the child dies. There's a promise that the rest of the children, your children will be successful, and it seems to have convinced many people. I always thought, and I've never seen this inside, although somebody told me he saw it in a sefer, but I don't know if it's true or not. I thought that the line of reasoning that the priests used was simple. If I were there, and if I was trying to convince somebody of this, all I would have told you is the following. The greatest act of self-sacrifice is not killing yourself. That's not the greatest act of self-sacrifice, because it's worse to have the guilt that you killed your own child. Anybody who has a child will tell you that you'll do anything for your child. It's 100%. You would do absolutely anything for them. So to take your child and to kill your child would be the greatest act of self-sacrifice of all time. How do I know that? From the Akedah. The Akedah was the greatest act of self-sacrifice. That Avraham Avinu loved his child so much, Yitzchak Avinu, and yet he was still able, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to bring his child as a sacrifice, he was willing to bring up his child as an Olah. So this is what the priest would say. Avraham Avinu was the greatest act of self-sacrifice. You should want to emulate that. The reason why Yitzchak survived is because God saw that he was going to become a great person, and he was better off alive than dead. So he stopped him at the last second and said, no, it's better if Yitzchak lives. It's better. Don't do that to Yitzchak. And he saved Yitzchak at the very last second. So you should do the same. Offer your child to Molech. Offer your child and sacrifice him to God. Give him over to God. And if he's worthy, God will save him. just like he did by Yitzchak. And if he's not worthy, then he wasn't worth saving anyway. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want to save him, and you won't have to worry about the child anymore. That's the idea. At least you'll know that that Russia is already dead. That's what I would assume that that was. That's the concept of what they were able to convince the people to do, and the people might have gotten that. Oh, it is like the Akedah. Oh, and I'll see, is my child really worthy to be like Yitzchak Avinu or not? I get that. I can somewhat understand that type of line of reasoning. Says the Me'ashi Loach, the Ishbitzer, a little bit differently how to understand it. The idea behind Moach, the greatest love in the world is a father to a son. The other nations, notice, it's from the 8th parak of Sanhedrin is where it's brought down. That if anybody is coming through a tunnel, right, in order to steal from a certain house, you're allowed to kill the guy. Why are you allowed to kill the guy without even knowing what he's in there for? You're allowed to kill him. Why are you allowed to kill him? Because he's a road. If you know that he's coming to take your money, that means that you would stand up to try to save your money. He's willing to kill you to get your money, so therefore you should kill him first. It's a difficult line of reasoning, but that's the basic idea. That anybody would be like that except for one case. If your father is in the tunnel. Because your father would never kill you. Your father would never kill you. And therefore you're not allowed to kill your father if your father is in a tunnel trying to steal from you. Even though your father is trying to steal from you in a tunnel, and that in and of itself is crazy, nonetheless, that love is beyond anything. And any, if you have a child, that it's 100% true. The other nations want to show they're not meshubit, they're not subservient to anything. Even this love. And they're willing to sacrifice that love to show that they're absolutely free. That's what they're doing. They get to choose to do whatever they want. And that's what they think. We're doing anything we want. You think that we're subservient to that love? We're not. See, I'm willing to even sacrifice my child. I'm willing to give him up. I have no problem with that whatsoever. It's like, it's almost like this. It's a Musar vort almost. It's a Musar idea. They think they're in charge. They think that they're doing what they want to do, but really they're not. The Moloch priests would convince them to do this. And they thought they're doing it in their own line of reason, but they're not. Somebody is convincing them to do it. Hashem forbade this service because he wanted that love to remain inside this world to give an example of how a person should be able to serve him. Should be able to serve him. That the memory that a person has, it's almost always, the memory that a person has of his father is usually his way of finding a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And usually, that's his way of connecting to God. I found very, very often that the people that had, unfortunately, hard situations with their father, not necessarily their mother, but with their father, usually cannot figure out what God is trying to do to them. Because that fatherly figure that you had in your life, that you remember, that you have there, is so there with you that it allows you to think of what Avinu Malkeinu would possibly be. How a Kadosh Baruch Hu would act. And that's the idea behind it. This is the service of any of what is our. It's to sort of to destroy the real love and fear and use it in a messed up manner. And that's the reason why Moloch is used over here. To destroy that love, so to speak. They think that they're destroying love and doing whatever they want. No, it's not. It's not so. We still haven't answered why it's here. Why is it put in the middle of our eyes? So I think the easiest answer is brought by the Rishon. It's not brought by Rashi or the Ramban, but it's brought down by the Rishon, like the Rabbi Nofayin, the Panach Raza. Show you the connection between Avodah Zarah and Arayis. That the only reason why people ever did idols is because of the Arayis that came along with it. I think we can all imagine that. I mean, paganism was an awesome religion for people who wanted to do whatever the heck they wanted to do. I mean, that was awesome. What they had. I'm sorry? Some of the gods in Hinduism as well. We don't have to go into details here, but Arayis plays a very high, very, very big role. And especially, well, I don't want to say that, but especially in certain religions that are definitely around nowadays, it played an extremely huge role in making it popular. That's what Arias was. Avodah Zarah was based on Arias. So it's possible that this part of Avodah Zarah, this Molech, was put inside to, I guess, in the same idea of Arias to tell you how bad it was. But that doesn't explain why Molech, and it doesn't explain why he divided up, says the Gan Rava. The halacha is, you're not allowed to bring any of your children to Moloch. So the Gemara asks, what about a mamzer? Can you bring a mamzer to Moloch? A child that you had in an illicit relationship, you're allowed to bring that child to Moloch. Yeah.
Method of serving Hashem, or is there stuff that Avodah Zarah?
I mean, the people sometimes fool themselves into thinking that it was, but no. It was a separate Avodah Zarah. Yeah.
How would you permit
it was actually the Avodah Zarah of Amo. They used to do Moloch more than anybody else. But people felt that that was another way of getting close to God. Maybe they could use it, utilize it in a way of getting close to a Kadosh Baruch.
It's from Avodah Zarah. Yeah, well, it's already answered Avodah Zarah. Why would it be
because Moloch, you're not really usually, that's the difference. The difference is that usually by Avodah Zarah, there are four things that are also. Anybody know the four things that are also?
Worshipping it.
Well, what's the word?
Bowing
down to it.
Slaughtering.
Sacrificing in front of it.
Libation.
Libation and sprinkling blood in front of it are the four ways. So sacrificing your child is not a korban. That's not a real korban, so really it should be other. Bal Peor. Another issue altogether, but it's very similar to the same line of reasoning. Bal Peor was, I'm free. I can do whatever I want. I can even go to the bathroom on my own idol. That was the concept behind Bal Peor, that you were free to do anything you wanted. And this is the concept in the same type of way. That's, I think, why Moloch is separate from the Avodah Zarah. The Moloch is part of Avodah Zarah, but it's not the same. You're not bowing down. You're not sacrificing an animal. You're not doing anything else. I'm sorry? Oh, for sure. Whatever. Yeah, of course, it's Amun. I mean, there's for sure something. Either way, you can't even bring a mamzer to Moloch. If you had a mamzer through an illicit relationship, you want to bring that mamzer over to Moloch, you're still chayav misa for that. I'm sorry, for sure, murder is a problem, but I'm saying you're over on Moloch, right, where I am going to put my face on that person, it says in Parshas Kedoshim regarding Moloch. It applies in that case as well. Now, that's the idea. So maybe that's why. The original arayas are all relationships which are usur, in which a mamzer comes to them. Sleeping with your sister, sleeping with your mother, sleeping with your daughter, sleeping with your granddaughter, sleeping with your wife's sister, sleeping with all these different people. If you're together with them, they cause mamzerus. There's a mamzer that is formed from that relationship. They're all chayiv karet, and there's a mamzer that's formed from any of them. The only two arayas where there is no mamzer being formed, I should add that nida is a little bit of a question, although a ben nida is still considered somewhat of a form. We don't paskin it as a mamzer, but there is something wrong. It's a pagam when a person is a ben nida. But the last two, it's impossible. Sleeping together with a guy and being together with an animal, it's impossible to have a mamzer. So maybe that's why it's brought up in the middle, to differentiate between those that are mamzerim, in which the mamzerim are brought over to Moloch, the children that could be born, in which Moloch would apply to, and then you have the two that have no shaykhus to anything whatsoever. You should know. I'm going to say something that I found this before, and I thought it was absolutely hilarious. Then I found this, and then I found an addition to this. It's absolutely one of the craziest things I've ever heard in my life. Regarding Moloch, Rav Akiva Breda Rava holds that if you bring all your kids to Moloch, you take all your kids and you bring them through to Moloch. That's what Achaz did, by the way. Achaz brought every single one of his kids to Moloch. One survived. It was Chizkiah. If you do that, you're potter. Because the pasuk says, Mizar Echa, from your children, but you can't bring all your children. You're putter. So what does that mean? What if you do, or you go all the way, all of a sudden you're going to be putter? Why would it be putter if you brought all your children to Moloch? You'd think you'd be chayiv 20 times over. The answer is, says the smag, Sefer Mitzvot Gedolos, he brings down, someone who dies through Misas Beis Din, through a regular Misas Beis Din, you get skila, straight by Harry Chenek, you have a kapara. You can imagine. Obviously, you get through one of these Misas Beis Dins, you're going to get a kapara through it. This person did something that's so stupid. He brought all his children to Moloch. He doesn't deserve to have a kapara. So we say you're a putter because such a fool shouldn't get such a kapara. We don't allow him to have such a kapara. Similarly, says the Chafetz Chaim. Okay, this you got to be very careful. This says the Chafetz Chaim. For nowadays, one can blame someone who allows all his children to go to schools that are filled with the denial of God's existence. He has no chance for a kapara. His children will be lost, chas v'shalom, and thus all such people will never be given a chance to be able to get a kapara for it. Even when it was the law against them, I mean, obviously, Chafetz Chaim lived in Bolshevik Russia, and eventually, I don't know if he was there for communist Russia. Somebody who knows history might be able to tell me. He was there for communist Russia? 33, yeah.
Communist revolution, 1917.
So good. We do have a history major. That's good. That's much, much better. So you have the communist Russia. There were rules, laws being put up in Russia at the time that were telling people that you have to send to people to schools that were irreligious completely. And the Chafetz Chaim held, you cannot give in, do not send your children to those schools because it's going to have a negative effect on their souls. They'll be lost to Klal Yisrael forever. I don't know if you would possibly, if you're going to be lost, you're going to be sent to Siberia, but I don't know what the actual psak was. But the idea that he was saying is bringing in your children to teachers of those type was like bringing them into houses of idol worship. It's like bringing into something like that. Take it to a different extreme. I've mentioned this before, but I'm going to say it. I cannot believe it says it. Everybody sees the Midrash says. You know what the Midrash says? those five books in English, whatever. Not the Little Midger Size, that was for kids, but the Midger Size. It's an unbelievable book, absolutely unbelievable set of Sarm, okay? On page 221 in this week's Parsha, page 221 is the last page in Parsha Choremos, says that even though this rite is no longer practiced today, Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld told others that entrusting children to teachers who will mold their children's minds with their actions, whether deliberate or not, is the same as giving your child to Moloch. Taken to another extreme. You know what the Midrash says himself? He adds this on as a Chiddush. He goes on to say the same would apply to a parent who forces their kids to go to college. You like that? You like that? The author of the English version of the Midrash says. Is that unbelievable? I know. It's the best line I've seen in a very, very long time. He says, where the Molech professors are cunning and able to burn your soul as well as your body, he says that even that would be considered like going to Molech today. I thought that was the greatest line I've ever seen anywhere. I'm sorry?
Force them.
If you want to go ahead and burn yourself by going into Molech, do whatever you want. Nobody's going to stop you. It's when your parents send you to Moloch that's the problem. Don't bring them into the chance of going into Moloch. If they don't want to go, don't let them go. If they want to be burned, let them burn. I don't want to say we let them burn. That's the idea behind it. I thought that was absolutely hilarious. Either way, regardless, I'm not going against everybody that goes to God. I'm just telling you, you're worshiping Moloch. I mean, you're an Ovid of Odazar for the rest of your life. It's fine. If you want to go to Gehenna for the rest of your life, you're fine. It's fine. You want to burn yourself? Go ahead. Just put your hand in the fire. Including Ish, of course. Vignettes of greatness. I do not know which one. This comes from the books of Visions of Greatness. Okay, I was reading this book. I don't remember who brought it over. I must have gotten it in the mail somehow. But Vignettes of Greatness, Volume 17, page 15, brings down a story. This is a great story. Rabbi Shane, the Rosh Yeshiva of Adelphia. I don't know if he's still alive today. I don't know Adelphia very well. Was helping out someone. Yeah.
Which one, Roman?
Yes. Then yes, with helping out someone by speaking to a lawyer for her. So he went to a lawyer and started speaking. The person didn't speak English so well, this woman. So she brought Rabbi Shen. Rabbi Shen was sitting down talking to the lawyer, translating from whatever it was, either Yiddish to English or Hebrew to English. I don't know which one it was, but translating. He sensed that the lawyer, although the lawyer did not have any vestiges of Judaism anywhere around him, he sensed that the man was Jewish. So he asked him if he was. He asked him if he was Jewish or not. And of course, the man told him, I am, but don't get any ideas, Rabbi. I'm an atheist. Mm-hmm. That's what he told him. Okay, so Rabbi Shane said to him, so what happened? Why are you an atheist? He said, listen, when I grew up, I went to Hebrew school when I was a child. I went to Hebrew school. And to be honest, it was terribly boring. The teachers were not into it whatsoever. They were horrible teachers. I was completely turned off and uninterested. So I considered both sides of the matter, and I made a very informed choice. And my informed choice was that I decided I'm going to be an atheist. Okay, so Rabbi Shane said to him, that's fine. Do you have any children? Do you have any children that, you know, to yourself? So he said, yeah, I have two daughters. One is 11 and one is 8. So that's unbelievable. Are they going to Hebrew school? That's what Rabbi Shane asked him. So the guy said to him, Rabbi, are you not paying attention? I'm an atheist. Of course I'm not going to send them to Hebrew school. Why would I send them to Hebrew school if I don't believe in God whatsoever? So Rabbi Shane said to him, one of the best lines I think I've ever heard in my life. I don't think I've ever heard a line like this, and I have to be able to use this at some point. He said, think about what you just told me. Okay? You became an atheist by choice. You made an informed decision. You went to Hebrew school, and you decided you still wanted to be an atheist. Shouldn't you give them the exact same choice? Send them to Hebrew school and let them decide if they want to be atheists. Let them consider both sides of the matter and let them figure it out on their own. So the guy said, that was one of the best line I've ever heard from anyone. Think about that. That is an awesome line. That is an unbelievable line. So why don't you send him to Hebrew school? I don't know the end of the story. I have a feeling that the end of the story is that, you know, the guy became from and now he's Rebel Yashiv. That very well could be the story, and that could be it. If it's Hasidic, I mean, Adelphia is not a Hasidic place. So you'd assume that that's not the end of the story. The guy just thought about it. Maybe he did send his kids to Hebrew school. Maybe they became from, maybe they didn't become from. Maybe they became, you know, maybe... Maybe they all married Rosh Hashanah, and they're all living in Eretz Yisrael by the Kotel in Eishat Torah looking up. Obviously, I have no idea. But just sending a kid to Hebrew school would be an awesome line in and of itself. I thought that was unbelievable to consider both sides of the matter, to at least let it make sense. The last thing I'm going to say regarding this Indian itself, we have one more thing after this, but this shocked me. I had a suffix whether or not I should put this on tape, because it's very harsh for certain people. But a man once asked the Chazon Ish, okay, how is it possible that so many children were killed in the Holocaust? How is it possible that they were all killed? What had the children done to deserve it? So the Chazon Ish answered that many times he had heard from the word, from the mouth of the Chafetz Chaim, that sending kids to the schools that they were in Europe was like sending them to Molech. The difference was is that Molech burned your body, while the schools burned their souls. Since many people didn't listen, said the Chazon Ish, the punishment came mida keneged mida, and their bodies were burned in the ovens. That's a powerful line. And I would never have the guts to say such a thing. I can't imagine that there are people that have the ability. And remember, Chazon Ish died in the 60s. We're not talking about a person who's 60 years, 65 years removed from the Holocaust, where it's already like a distant memory for people. The Chazon Ish was alive and well during the Holocaust, working as hard as he could to try to get people there to stall. He knew what was going on. And I'm sure he had the sensitivity of those people who had lost kids in the Holocaust. But that was his line over there,
but
of what was happening.
It's
not. It's the media community. The kids didn't put themselves through Moach when their parents sent them in. I know that's a strange line. Same thing with Mamzer. How does a Mamzer become a Mamzer? It's only through the parents. You cannot choose. You cannot do anything to become a Mamzer. You're either a Mamzer or you're not, and it's all due to your parents. It's not your fault. Alavos. And clearly there is a way to kill children, Alavos. Listen, I don't... Chazon Ish says it. I quoted it for you. I can't go any further than that. It is an unreal line and something to at least think about with all that. I have the exact quote, but it's brought down in the Chafetz Chaim Al Torah. After it mentions this thing about the Chafetz Chaim, it mentions from the Chazon Ish and it quotes where it's from. Maisa something or other. I forgot to write it down over here.
Regarding Moab, can you all say the pasuk about Moab comes right after the pasuk of it's forbidden to speak with someone else's wife?
Right.
So perhaps Moloch is just a form of cheating on God. Just like a woman not cheating on her husband.
Same way that Avodah Zarah is. Very, very good. Yeah. The same type of idea of Ish is Ish, so to speak. That us going together with another person is like the wife, us, Klal Yisrael, and the husband is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, cheating on our husband together with somebody else. Very, very good. Okay, by Orla. We're going to end off with this. It's a nice little medrash. The medrash says by Orla. We all know what Orla is. Orla is the first... I mean, Kedoshim has some unbelievable halachos. Absolutely unbelievable halachos. One after the other. They just go one after the other. Each one. It's like a whole parsha in and of itself. You really need a parsha to understand the entire thing. And it's just quickly, from one to the next, one to the next, one to the next. So by Orla, you are forbidden to eat the fruits of a tree for the first 3 years of a tree's existence. There's a lot of halachos that deal with this. What is considered 3 years? When is a 3 year start? Etc., etc., etc. But you're not allowed to eat the fruits for the first 3 years. That's called Orla. It applies in Eretz Yisrael. It applies in Chutz Lars. It applies everywhere. Can't eat the first 3 years of a tree's fruit. Okay? The Medrash says on Orla, what happened to you, Adam Marisha? Adam Marisha, what's wrong with you? You weren't able to keep a mitzvah of not eating from the fruit for one day, while your children were able to hold off of Orla for 3 years. They can stop themselves from eating for 3 years. You couldn't stop yourself for one day from eating from the fruits? That's the line. Now, what does that have to do with anything? I mean, sure, it's a little dig on Adam, but what's the pshat that we're mentioning Adam together with Orla? What does that mean? Says the Ksav Sofer, every food that is usher, any animal that is usher, anything that we are not allowed to eat is only usher because we're eating them before their proper time. Because you can't accept the food in the levush, in the clothing, so to speak, what it's wearing right now, because it's shoresh. The root of everything in the world is kosher. There's nothing in this world that isn't kosher. It's just in order to use it correctly, it needs to be done in a certain way. An example, poison is obviously terrible for the system. But we all know that poison has antibodies that allow you to be able to survive when certain things happen to you. If you become poisoned, the only way to get healed is by using the antibodies that are within the poison. You get a snake bite, the only way to survive is by using that snake bite and turning it into something good for you. That's the only way for it to be able to happen. So if that's true, that means that eventually there must be a way to make things kadosh and mutter to eat. There must be. There's a way to make it kadosh and to make things everything mutter. But until then, they're completely usher. When they're usher, that means they're metamte malev. They close your heart and close your mind and your thought process that we spoke about before in Parshmini to where you can't make the right decisions. But in the future, Vasid Labo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give us Deya Rechava. a huge amount of ability. Our minds are going to be wide open to accept and understand everything that we need to know, and these foods will be able to be in our system and not affect us. Thus, says the Medrash Tehillim Kuf Mem Vav, Hashem matir asurim, Hashem will matir those things that are usur, that He will matir all the foods that are usur now, will be mutter lasid lava. And that's why the chazir is called the chazir, because it's going to be chozer to us, lasid lava. But until then, if you eat it before that point, before you have the ability to make it kadosh, before you have the ability to bring it back to you, if you eat it before then, you're like Adam Rishon before the chit. Adam also could have eaten from the Eitz Hadas had he waited until Shabbos. If he would have waited until Shabbos, he would have eaten from the Eitz Hadas. But he didn't wait, he wanted it now, he had a type of and ate it right then, and therefore he was punished. And so too by us. If we eat the fruits of Orla beforehand, that's it. We're going to be affected. And the idea behind Orla is the concept of waiting for foods until they're proper for us to eat and to be able to be metaken and bring it up to Shemayim and make it kadosh. That's the idea behind it. But don't get me wrong, don't get me wrong ideas. Nobody here is kadosh yet enough to be able to go outside and eat whatever you want. I'm sorry? Solid question. Okay, there is a Gemara in Erevin at Dr. Gimel of Bez that says that you, in order to become certain Tamachachim, you know, that, like that, Reb Meir, well, you have to be able to be Metayer Asheretz in 150 different ways. 150 different ways. Now, it could very well be it's true. Could very well be that that is all there. There's a famous Gra that says that it's not that you have to matur it in 150 ways. There's one way to matur Asheretz, and there's a remez in the Torah. Go find the remez. And Ravina then said, I could do it, and he gives one example, like Shkayach. Everybody else gave 150, you could give one. And Ravina was trying to say that this was what the, it was like a hint in the Torah. It's not to matur it literally. It's that you have the ability to, but you don't. See what I'm saying? Sanhedrin has to have, if you want to paskin that a guy is chayiv misa, one guy has to say that the guy is innocent. One guy has to say that the guy is putter. If you have every single person saying he's chayiv, then the guy is chayiv. But one guy has to have the ability to find a patur for that guy. That's the idea. That's the same idea with being Matara Sharet. Three things, guys. Our summary is the Yetzer Hara running wild. We gave that case with the guy going to the restaurant in the beginning. Molech, what happens, why it happens, and nowadays, how it could apply nowadays, and Orla and Adam Rishon. I give you a job. Have a